Greater Santon and beyond. Get ready for the Santon Times Hour.
With your host,
Alexander.
That's right, ladies and gentlemen, everyone in between and beyond. It's midday in Atlanta, 6 p.m. in Paris, 8 p.m. in Qatar, midnight in Bangkok, and 2 a.m. in Tokyo. And this is the Santon Times Hour on Mix 93.8 and also available on all good digital audio platforms. I'm Alexander Leitner, and this is edition 145, week 7 of 2024. And what a month it's turning out to be. But let's get through the housekeeping. If you'd like to get in touch, you can send through your questions, your comments, your feedback, and you can do so using the email address editor@santontimes.co.za. You can connect on social media at Santon Times and also visit the website www.santontimes.co.za. And also, if you're listening live right now on 93.8 and not at a later stage on the digital platforms, well, you can use the WhatsApp line. It's open 0848220938. That's the Mix 93.8 WhatsApp line, which is 0848220938, and it's always great to hear from you and get your comments, your feedback, and if and when we can, we also like to read those out as well, which is always great. A special welcome to everyone listening for the very first time. If it is your first time tuning into the Santon Times Hour, well, let me personally welcome you. And if you listen regularly in Johannesburg or Pretoria, across South Africa, or anywhere and everywhere else in the world, on air or online, I'm happy to report that all is well in Santonland. And as you always know, I team up with Vincenzo behind the mixing desk. And he always makes sure that we sound as good as possible when we come to you. And I don't know about you, but it feels like election season is well upon us. And we're not going to be able to avoid it. This is going to be a run for the books up until whenever that date is when the elections happen. But let me remind you also that if you haven't registered yet, register. You can still do it. And not just in South Africa, you can register wherever you're listening to this in the world. So if you're South African, if you've got the right documents, please make sure you register and cast your vote. If you're not doing it for yourself, do it for your family, do it for your friends. It's your right, your privilege to do so. And you can do that up until the point at which the president announces the date. So when he announces the date, that's when, I suppose your chance moves on. But until such point, you can do so. And also, like I said, I think in previous weeks, make sure that you're also registered in the right suburb that you're in. So if you've moved from Buckpoort to Boksburg or wherever, make sure that you've changed that address, because you'll only be able to vote in the suburb that you're in. And on that note, the stages of load shedding are moving up and down, more up than they are down. But I don't know how you're coping with it. Maybe you're listening to us in the dark right now. Maybe you're trying to listen to this through a streaming device. I mean, we've had, 9.5 to 11.5 hours of no electricity once again per day. And, it's been so many months down the line that we've been doing this. I actually wonder if it is still a huge issue in your life. Have you managed to make some sort of plan to get through load shedding? Have you got a backup battery or a little gas stove or a torch or a candle or something that makes load shedding a little bit better? Or is it just one of those things that just is an absolute massive inconvenience? It doesn't matter how many plans you make, how big or small, enough is enough. Be interesting to hear from you what you think. Two very sad announcements, and more on a personal note. I was sad to see Andy Rice, one of South Africa's preeminent branding and advertising experts, passing away this past week. And I had the privilege of knowing Andy, having worked with him. I was the chair of a benevolent fund in the advertising and marketing industry for a bit, and Andy was the first patron of that fund, and we had a chance to have a couple of coffees and meetings during that time, and I always thought he was a fantastic person, very knowledgeable, just one of those people who just exuded brand. He lived brand. And he was just one of those people who was just so wise, so witty, and he just had that very distinct voice. When you heard him, you knew it was him. And sorry to see that he passed away. And then only also very recently, actually last month, another gentleman called Walter Gelderblom, who was a publicist at New Metro, and also sadly learned that he had passed away quite unexpectedly beginning of January. And I'd worked with him last year on our very first movie screening with the Santon Times, and we'd just spoken in December talking about all the screenings we were planning to do this year, And then I got the very sad news that Walter had also passed away. And my heart and thoughts and prayers go out to their families, to their friends. And I do hope that both these gentlemen rest in peace. Yeah. So coming up on this week's show, I anticipate an interview with Spice as I get the reaction to this past week's State of the Nation address from an independent association whose members include the leaders of some of South Africa's biggest and most well-known companies. Stay tuned for that. Then a young South African is taking to the stage in Portugal to hopefully make it to the Eurovision 2024, and I'll tell you the full story on that as well. I headed down to Cape Town towards the end of last year to take a leisurely cruise around Cape Town on a super yacht. All the details coming up in the next hour. And finally, I take you to a new boutique retreat in Hout Bay as I experience the latest offering in this growing global travel trend. You're listening to the Santa Times Hour on Mix 93.8, and it's time for a bit of music as we kick things off. It's Liente, Quinton Circle, and Zana with Dance For Me.
Show some love.
Subscribe. Share.
Leave a review and rating for the Santon Times Hour
on your favorite podcast app now.
The best of talk and music in 1 hour. This is the Santon Times Hour.
This is the Santon Times Hour on Mix 93.8 and also available on all good digital audio platforms. And as we get this week's show on the road, probably one of the hottest pieces of conversation over the last week must have been the State of the Nation address, the SONA, the last one for Cyril Ramaphosa in his current administration. And then obviously we have to see what happens once the elections take place later on this year. And then we'll see what happens for SONA next year. But it's been a very interesting conversation. I mean, there's been a lot of commentary around SONA. And I think being in Africa's richest square mile, being in the heart of business in not just South Africa, but I also think in Africa, we couldn't just let it go by. We had to have a chat about it. Here to talk to me about it is Busi Mavusa. She's the CEO of Business Leadership South Africa. And Busi, as we get things going, maybe just your general impressions of SONA. What were your thoughts as you were listening to the president tell us about the year that was, or the year that is, or the democracy that we've had since 94?
So it was very interesting, very long and winding speech. And the president, I think, was very predictable, Alex, in using the platform to campaign for the ANC, you know, using the theme of the democracy child who essentially wouldn't be where they are had it not been for the ANC. It was also quite interesting how the state capture was blamed for the collapse of certain institutions and the decimation of the economy, as if it was not a mess of this ANC-led government's creation, you know. And then it goes on to praise the ANC for fixing what they broke, you know, which I really thought was actually quite sad, as it were. I wouldn't call it funny, you know. And unfortunately, he's blaming the previous administration for the state capture, and that doesn't really cut it, because the truth is that there are still too many people in his current administration who are responsible for the state capture. So it's not just the previous administration issue, and 5 years into this administration, more could have been done to hold those people responsible. So overall, I really think that it was a largely backward-looking speech and very little looking forward. No new funding commitments were made, and virtually nothing new policy-wise. So nothing much really came out of it.
Well, touching on saying it was a very long speech, I mean, I think we were almost spared maybe an extra hour or half an hour without all the shenanigans that normally take place during the State of the Nation. I mean, we would have probably all sat there till midnight had other things taken place. So we got the speech clear cut as it was without all the drama around it. I was following some of it on Twitter or X, and I must say, overwhelmingly, it's the first time that I've actually seen this on social media or as the speech was taking place. Most people were calling out the speech for saying that none of this makes sense, none of this is true, but probably to 90 or 95%. There was nobody there who was saying, wow, this is all true, yeah, or this is something that, you know, we haven't heard before, yeah, which I thought was very interesting. And I thought it was an interesting speech to put out there with a majority of people saying, listen, you know what, I don't know if we're living in the same country.
Absolutely. You know, someone actually was saying to me this morning that a new book is coming out called Cyril in Wonderland, you know, because precisely, you know, of those sentiments that were shared by so many South Africans of how out of touch the president seemingly is from reality. But it's not really him being out of touch, Alex. I really think that it is the electioneering. You know, the president was clearly using that, you know, to actually appeal to the electorate to say, remember what we have done, you know, and many of the things that he actually spoke about, you know, for the 30 years are actually true, but it's just that the story is not complete. It's not complete in that he is actually failing and there's too many gaps in it, you know, around the decimation of the economy that was created by this very same government and the impact that it has actually had on a whole lot of South Africans. You know, you can't stand on podiums and claim and actually expect an applause for bringing so many people into the social grant system, which is great because those people are getting at least something instead of nothing. But we shouldn't be here. That's the thing. You know, you're sitting with more than 60% youth unemployment. Those young people, many of which are sitting with either a matric or some form of qualification, are not looking for a 350 unemployment grant. They are looking to meaningfully participate in the economy. And the reason why they can't participate in the economy, a lot of investors are actually saying that it doesn't make sense for us to come and invest in a country where on any given day, depending on which stage load shedding you are, you know, you're going to be sitting with 10 hours, you know, of load shedding a day, you know, and once you've produced your goods, you can't get them to market because Transnet is dysfunctional, you know, and depending on where you are in the country, water is already, you know, a crisis. So those basics, the network industries, you know, which is energy, transport, logistics, and water are critical for investment. And I think the reason why, you know, we are struggling to attract investment, and this is evident in the minimal, you know, foreign direct investment that is coming into the country, is precisely because of those issues. I don't know if you remember Thomas Schaefer, the CEO of passenger cars of VW last year, coming out to say, as an organization, at some point, we're going to have to ask ourselves a question of, does it make sense for us to continue producing our cars here? You know, and was making reference to the many challenges on the ground that companies are facing. You know, so you're actually right, you know, to say that Cyril is really out of touch, and yet he then speaks about these challenges as if someone created them and then they came in to fix them, which is actually not true, you know, because this is actually a mess of their creation, and they are actually taking too long and dragging their feet to actually fix this mess. It should have been done quite some time ago, but the reality is that a lot of people in his current administration are blocking the progress that we actually should be seeing as South Africans.
Well, one of my favorite tweets of the evening was the whole thing seemed like a couch half full kind of approach. Very, very optimistic in a time where a lot of us are not quite seeing the same picture. Boosie, we're going to take a quick break. I'm going to catch up with more of the Sona with you in just a minute.
From Greater Sandton to the rest of the world, this is the Sandton Times Hour. Listening to the Sandton Times Hour.
You're listening to the Sandton Times Hour on Mix 93.8. I'm chatting to Boosie Mavusa, CEO of Business Leadership South Africa, about Sona 2024 that we experienced this past week and just sort of piecing it all together. Boosie, in terms of Business Leadership South Africa, the body that you represent, large-scale businesses, people invested in South Africa, what would you have wanted to hear and what do you think needs to happen as we go into elections in only a couple of months, in terms of getting South Africa on track from where you're sitting?
From a business's view, and then maybe a reaction from our lens, was that Alex, he's actually right, and he was right to emphasize the economic reforms as these are critical to turning around the dire economic performance. It was also appropriate for him to celebrate the progress made in electricity reforms because these have enabled the private sector to invest, and much more investment will come with further reforms, including the 14,000 kilometers of new transmission lines to accommodate renewable energy that is going to be built over the coming years. So he has promised to fast track that that process, and it will be crucial that it does this, you know, as it will enable the great investment by the private sector. So we're hoping that that actually promise that he has made does come along. He also pointed to the importance of the logistics roadmap that is key to dealing with the country's logistics crisis. And it was important that he actually affirms that plan as the country's transport and logistics true north, because the document really represents the best thinking on how to improve our logistics performance. So that was definitely a positive. But on both the energy and transport fronts, you know, much more could have been done, you know, and I think I've alluded to it that the president knows very well that the progress has been minimal because of the resistance from some in his own government who are currently frustrating the process and frustrating the progress. So business wanted clear indications of how the blockages will be overcome to improve the confidence that the reform momentum will be maintained, and that unfortunately wasn't clear. He also did a decent job of acknowledging the role of business, although in passing on various fronts, you know, such as the energy, the ports, the visa, the NPA and the police and the many other, initiatives as it were. So it would be interesting, I think, from an infrastructure perspective to see if the new infrastructure financing mechanisms are going to be followed through in the budget speech when it actually comes on the 21st of February. And this is important because this can unleash significant investment if an enabling environment is created. So the reality here, Alex, is that government spending on infrastructure has actually been shrinking for many years. And you can see now that they are introducing these new funding mechanisms because they are trying to tap into the private sector funding because they don't have any money in the fiscus to be able to make sure that the infrastructure that is required does happen. So there was also a very welcome new emphasis on the potential of the green economy and a commitment to stimulate the mining exploration with the creation of a new fund, you know, which is important. But we really need to deal with the policy uncertainty that has hung over that mining industry for well over a decade. That would do much more to promote investment and the new exploration. The big negative for us is his insistence on wanting to sign the NHI, even when he knows that this bill is unworkable, even when he knows that this bill is unimplementable, even when he knows that this bill is unfundable. National Treasury has already come out and said, we don't have money to fund this thing. The Minister of Health has come out and said, for us to be able to implement the NHI, we need 200 billion rands to fix the current public healthcare infrastructure. So signing a bill into law that you know very well that you don't have the means, you don't have the systems, you don't have the funding, you don't have the resources to implement it is a problem, because you think that you might be doing a positive signaling exercise, and in essence you are not. Because remember, as soon as you actually promise such things, people hold you to it. You know, people are actually going to expect you to implement this thing, and if you can't implement it, it then becomes, you know, anarchy. So we are therefore worried about that, to say what is the thinking. But of course, you know, it was mainly an electioneering speech, and we think that it was his way of trying to appease the electorate, but he's appeasing them with wrong things, things you know very well that you actually cannot deliver, as it were.
Well, you touched on the budget speech, and you know, if you want a sobering experience, you go to the accountants and they give you the rands and cents and they tell you what can be done and can't be done. So do you think that the budget speech will be a bit more of a realistic sonar or an outlook of where we're actually going versus, you know, the speech that we had?
The minister is actually going to have a very tough exercise, you know, of doing a balancing act, you know, a balancing act of trying to be seen to make allocations and to come up with funding for what the president has promised. He has, for instance, promised that the unemployment grants of 350 are actually going to be extended. It was already a problem with keeping these in the system as things stand, because he kept on saying the money for this thing is not there, you know, and the people who expect and continue to get, you know, these social relief of distress grant continue to grow. You know, it's going to cost, for instance, it costed government another 34 billion rands, you know, at the medium-term budget speech the last year, and he's going to have to find more money, you know, to try and actually, and it becomes difficult to say, where does the money come from? You know, at the moment, Alex, this country is borrowing 2 billion rands a day just to balance the books. We're not borrowing 2 billion rands to put into productive assets, to create jobs or whatever. It's like you wake up every morning, you need 100 rands to survive, but you wake up every morning with 80 rands. So because you need 100 rands to survive, you have to wake up every morning and go and borrow 20 rands just for you to survive. You're not investing that money. You know, it's for transport. You know, it's for food. It's for shelter. It's for, so that is where South Africa is at the moment. So it therefore doesn't make sense. You know, when you make these grand commitments like the NHI and the basic income grant that you know very well that there isn't any funding for, and trying to get funding for South Africa at the moment is very expensive, because remember, we're a junk status country. Remember, we've been grey listed by FATF. So the funding that therefore comes in, or that we actually borrow, comes at a very high cost. If you look at the budget at the moment, if I'm not mistaken, I think the debt servicing cost is the number two biggest expense, if it's not the number one biggest expense. You know, we are actually repaying interest at a rate of about a billion rands a day, if I'm actually not mistaken. So it therefore, so can you see that we're not going anywhere? It's a billion rands a day of interest and 2 billion rands a day that you actually borrow. So the Minister of Finance is going to have a very difficult job, you know, because then is going to have to be seen to deliver a very sensible, you know, budget speech under very severe constraints, and is going to try to walk a very difficult line while trying to maintain fiscal discipline, which is actually vital to maintaining business confidence. So let's see, you know, how we actually pulls a trick and a rabbit out of the hat, you know, in as far as this one is concerned.
Well, it's certainly been a week of rabbits and hats and Alice in Wonderland and all kinds of other things. Busi Mavusa, CEO of Business Leadership South Africa, thank you for joining me on the Santon Times Hour to get your reactions on SONA 2024. And I'm sure we're going to chat again in the build-up to the elections and also after the elections, because I think business has got a lot at stake when it comes to the economy and South Africa. We're going to take a quick musical break, and more of the Santon Times Hour right after this.
For more, the Santon Times Hour continues.
Welcome to the second half of the Santon Times Hour on Mix 93.8. I'm Alexander Leipner, and that was Tiesto with Lay Low. If you caught something intriguing during the show, or you missed all the details, or you can't remember what it was that we spoke about or spoke to, well, don't worry, you can head on to the santontimes.co.za, and you can explore the detailed show notes that we put up every week, and there's a breakdown of all the things we spoke about, names, details, links, further reading, all those kind of things, so you can do that during the week once you've had a listen to the show. And also don't forget to connect with the Santon Times on social media, at Santon Times, on all the platforms, Facebook, Threads, TikTok, Instagram, you pick your favorite platform, and you make sure that you follow the Santon Times there, and also feel free to engage. You can email, you can DM, you can voice note, whatever you choose to do, you can do that. Well, we always love chatting to strong talent, strong South African talent. We seem to be winning so many things this year. It actually is becoming almost par for the course if you're South African. And I'm thrilled to be joined by another one of those talents in the musical space. And we seem to have spoken to quite a lot of up-and-coming singers. Her name's Filipa. And she's competing in a Portuguese festival, or a festival in Portugal, called Festival de Cantão. No, that sounded like the closer version of the festival. That's actually Festival de Cantão. And Filipa, it's great to have you on the Santon Times Hour. How was that pronunciation?
Thank you for having me. It was actually not bad. I know it's a really tricky word, so that was pretty good.
Thanks so much.
So I give you like I'll give you like a great 9.5 out of 10 there.
Okay, great. Well, if this is a festival for pronunciations, I feel strong. I feel strong that I might actually make it. But tell me a little bit more about this festival. How did you get here? What's this festival about? It sounds very exciting.
It's Portugal's national competition to select who represents them in the Eurovision Song Festival. So it's really exciting because that obviously is like a massive opportunity. It's a great opportunity for my career, my mom and I have been watching Eurovision for years and years. It's just a thing we do at home. My mom just suggested one day, you know what, you're a Portuguese citizen, why don't you just apply, why don't you just send some songs, because they're, you know, you're able to do so if you are a Portuguese citizen, even if you're living abroad. So that was a really cool opportunity. And my mom just said, why don't you just go for it? Just submit the songs and see what happens. And that's what I did. I did it last year and nothing happened. And I thought, let me try again this year. And this year they selected one of my songs. So here I am.
So this is the festival before this is the competition before the big Eurovision competition.
Exactly.
And it's quite interesting if you've watched the Eurovision contest for many years. It's a very fine balance between half of the contestants that entering with what I would almost like to call like a novelty song. It's maybe not something that you would ever listen to on a regular basis, but it's got some catchy tune or some catchy hook or some really bizarre costume that just makes the whole thing come together. Mm-hmm. And then you actually do have some songs that really do carry legs. And I'm thinking about the one that won last year, which actually does become a bit of a radio hit and actually where you say, oh, wow, like Waterloo, you know, ABBA that we all know. It's a song that ended up, making it through the decades. Mm-hmm. What kind of song have you submitted? What song have you gone in with to try and firstly win this and then obviously then head on to Eurovision?
It's definitely pop. It's very much in line with who I am as an artist and my sound. And that's why it was actually quite a risk. Because you know the type of music that Portugal usually submits, they are one of those countries that do have more of a traditional, they kind of stick more to the traditional roots and their traditional sounds, like most countries do. Of course, things are changing in Eurovision, and I think there's more, which is amazing too, because I think there's more acceptance of different fusions, different sounds, different genres kind of going together. So I was a little nervous because I'm going in with, you know, a pop English song, and it's got a little bit of a darkness to it, a little bit of a mystery to it. I thought, you know, this is a little bit of a risky song to submit, but it, you know, they really liked it. And I think, you know, you never know which song, like you said, there's so many different kinds of songs that get submitted and different types of songs, and you never know what will stick and what people will really like and relate to and enjoy. So I think you just have to be authentic as an artist and just go in and see what happens. So that's what I did. You know, I went in with a song that was me, and that was who I am as an artist. And that was not the song that you would expect to kind of submit for this competition. And obviously then also having in mind, like if I had to represent Portugal, would this song work? And I think you never know what's going to happen. You never know what people will love. You never know, because music's music. It's constantly evolving, constantly changing. That's the beauty of it.
Well, look, not being much of a Eurovision strategist, but I've also had that debate about, do you go in with something that genuinely represents the culture that you're coming from? So if you're coming from Norway or Denmark or Slovenia or wherever, do you go in with a language of that country song, which probably 99% of the world will not understand, even have a vague idea of what's going on? Or do you go in with an English song, and then a lot of people go, hang on a second, but you're from Slovakia or you're from Austria. Why are you singing an English song? Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, I think it's a bit of also, you know, luck of the draw. I think you have to go in with your strongest idea. And like you say, you hope for the best. Maybe the song does really, really well. Maybe it doesn't. But at least, you know, if you're not in the game, you're not gonna win anything. How are you preparing for your performance? I mean, are you up against a lot of different people? I mean, have you got some very strong contenders in terms of the Portuguese music scene? Because we do know there's a lot of well-known Portuguese singers. It's got a very strong musical culture.
No, for sure. I mean, I'm one of 20 finalists. So, you know, there is actually a big group that competing for the title, I would say. Like I said, like the really cool thing is there's so many different sounds. Like each song is so unique in its own way. I would say yes, for sure. I mean, there's always strong contenders, you know, and it's all about the public, it's all about what people like. I would say yes, for sure. And that's, you know, we're all very, very different. So that's going to be interesting to see, you know, what happens. But all very talented, all very different, a lot of new artists too that I've also discovered, which is great. So you know, a lot of also new young artists, and they've all, like I said, got really unique sounds. So yeah, let's see what happens. But that's what makes it, I think, it's important for that. I think, you know, you don't want to have kind of artists that are all the same or songs that all sound the same. I mean, that makes it boring, you know. I'm very excited and I wish them all the best. And yeah, I'm very, very happy to see. I've been preparing for that. It's been a little bit stressful and overwhelming. So I think this is like a really big moment for me and a really big performance. But you know, just trying to also keep steady, keep focused, rehearse, and see, you know, do my best and like get myself prepped to just do my best and have fun on stage, because I think that's the most important thing. You also need to enjoy it. So I've been prepping in that way. A lot of mental preparation too.
Yeah, absolutely. No, for sure. Well, Philippa, we wish you all the best for your performance. And it's coming up in the next couple of weeks. And we'll put the details up on the website. I believe also parts of it will be shown on DSTV as well. So if people want to catch that and follow your journey as far and as wide as it goes. And Philippa, good luck and obrigado.
Obrigado. Thank you so much.
Connect with the Santon Times. Email editor@santontimes.co.za.
Well, change of pace, and the Hasendahl Wine Estate down in Stellenbosch. I don't know if you've ever been there, but it is a really stunning estate. It's tremendous. It's probably one of the better ones that I've been to when it comes to wine estates, because you sometimes find some wine estates do a lot with what they have in terms of the ground. You know, they've got a restaurant, they've got a wine tasting room, they've added on sort of a shopping experience, there's a chance to meet the winemaker. So if you're a big fan of the wine, you can go there and you can experience that. And then some other wine farms, you would drive there, you know, expecting this almost like a theme park, and there's nothing. There's not even a restaurant. There's not even a chance to try the wine. So to each their own. But Hasendahl Wine Estate has done some incredible work there in terms of conferencing facilities. They opened a fabulous new hotel on the property, which complements so many of the other really great attractions that they've built up around the wine farm. And they've now added this luxurious water-based addition to Hasendahl, which is called Princess Eve. It's a yacht, the Hasendahl yacht, named Princess Eve. And it's a residence unlike any other if you are into very high-end travel. It's an impressive 25 meters long, and it's a floating boutique hotel. And it's ultra-luxurious, and it gives you an experience of Cape Town, but from the water. So alone, the sleeping experience, and also just the chartering experience. If you want to charter this yacht and kind of travel to the different little harbors along the Cape Coast, you can see Cape Town from a very different perspective, which is from an ocean perspective. And the super yacht comes with a crew. They've got 3 to 5 yacht stewardesses and a captain who look after you. And I had a chance to board this yacht in December and just get a few hours of experience. Please don't think that I went out and chartered a yacht, a super yacht. And I believe it's one of the biggest, if not the biggest super yacht in South Africa at the moment. But I believe there's also talks that Cape Town will be building a super yacht harbor. But I'm trying to get some more details on that. But that should be quite interesting. It'll put us, I think, in the same league as Miami and Monaco when it comes to these private vessels. But the yacht has got everything you can imagine. It's got an incredible lounge. I took a bit of a tour around it. It's got a kitchen space. It's got multiple rooms. There's bunk beds, I think, for kids or for younger travelers on the yacht. There's a grand suite, a master suite, all with ensuite bathrooms. And it's amazing what they can fit onto a yacht if you're thinking about sort of bathroom facilities and sleeping facilities. They've also got jet skis on there if you want to go jet ski. There's also a jacuzzi if you want to sort of sit in your jacuzzi sipping away at your bubbly and watch Cape Town pass you by. There's also an inflatable motorboat that you can sort of take out, and also there's like a little bit of a ladder if you want to sort of anchor off the coast somewhere and go for a swim, although I know the Cape has got some very cold water, so I'm not quite sure if that's going to be everyone's thing, but if you're into those ice baths in the morning, maybe this is your chance to kind of do that in a more natural way. And it accommodates up to 8 people on an overnight cruise, and they also do sort of like day parties or day trips if you've got a company that just wants to do it for the day. And very spacious, quite something. And navigating it on a bit of rough seas is a bit tricky. I know when we went out, it was quite choppy. And that's an experience in its own right. But if you've got smooth sailing, well, let me tell you, I think this is something quite superb in terms of doing something a little bit different. And we had a good laugh because there were a couple of invited select media who came along on this little 2-3 hour trip out of Cape Town Harbour around Greenpoint, Seapoint, and then sort of back to the harbour. And, you know, it's parked, if you know the V&A waterfront, it's parked behind the bridge, that pedestrian bridge, that kind of swings open and swings closed as ships have to pass in and out. So basically what happens is as you have to leave the harbor, that bridge basically closes off to pedestrians. It opens up. You cruise through, and then the bridge kind of swings back into its position, and then people can cross over, which means that on the left, on the right of the yacht, people have to wait. And there's normally quite a few dozen, if not 100 people standing on either side now waiting for the yacht to pass, and then obviously cross the bridge once the bridge is back in place. So I had a good laugh with one of the journalists because we were standing there, and obviously people wave at you and they take photos and etc. And it's quite awkward, I think, at the best of times when you're standing there with a glass of bubbly having to wave back at complete strangers. But we did felt it would have been great if our high school maths teacher had been standing there waving back and gone, isn't that the guy that I taught matric maths to? Yeah, those are the moments you live for. But yeah, let's take a quick musical break. More of my adventures down in the Cape and an interesting retreat that has opened in Hart Bay right after this musical break. You're listening to the Sandton Times Hour on Mix 93.8.
Follow the Sandton Times on social media.
At Sandton Times.
Thank you, Alex. I love your professionalism, and thank you for having me on.
You're listening to the Sandton Times Hour.
This is the Sandton Times Hour on Mix 93.8, and as we head into the final minutes of this week's show, that was Sophie Ellis-Bextor and Panau with Murder on the Dance Floor, which was originally released, and hold onto your cotton socks for this one, in 2001. That's the year I matriculated. My gosh. I mean, talk about getting old. Now you look back on that and you go, 2001 is when the song came out. And now you fast forward to January 2024, and following the use of the song in the film called Saltburn, Murder on the Dance Floor has returned to the charts at number 2 on the UK singles chart. And it's become Sophie Ellis-Bextor's first top 10 appearance since 2007. And I think it's quite a nice remix by Panau of Murder on the Dance Floor. But it's amazing, hey? Now that you make a song 20, 30 years ago, and it suddenly just resurrects out of nowhere, and overnight you've back on the charts, and you barely remember when the last time you were on the charts. So good for Sophie Ellis-Bextor. So we were chatting about Cape Town, getting onto super yachts and experiencing that. And another interesting experience I had while I was down in Cape Town was a trip to a new space called the Future Found Sanctuary in Hart Bay in Cape Town. And this new property taps into this emerging and growing trend of wellness travel, health travel, regenerative travel, and more and more people looking for places they can go to. And we always say, oh, you know, I need to go on a holiday, I need to relax. And then you end up lying on the beach or getting, you know, heavily drunk on the all-you-can-drink drinks package at the resort. And you end up thinking, you know, was this really that healthy? Or you end up, you know, eating the entire buffet every day for 14 days, getting back, you know, 5 or 10 kilos heavier after your holiday, thinking, oh, well, that wasn't very healthy. But it was maybe very relaxing or very indulgent. But this is really tapping into a space where people are looking to get away, switch off their cell phones, meditate, do yoga, drink kale juice. I mean, all these things you can imagine to try and de-stress, be more mindful, and sort of switch off from the world. So when you say a relaxing holiday, it really is a relaxing holiday. And this is the trend that is growing more and more. I think as people are getting busier, as people are getting more connected, they want to disconnect. They want to be more relaxed. And I hadn't come across anything like this before. In all my travel writing and travels for the Sandton Times, this was the first one that had really sort of put a stake in the ground and said, well, this is what we're going to do and this is what we're going to be. And essentially, it's very luxurious accommodation in Hart Bay. It's actually a former private residence. And it's not just one residence, it's 3 residences. And it provides a bespoke wellness experience for those who come. So it's not just you go there and then you can swim and do all of those things, which you can do, but you can actually fill out a form in advance and say, I want to achieve this, I want to achieve that. And they kind of then custom make this wellness experience for you depending on what you want. Now, it's a hell of a task and we'll get into that just now. But it comprises of 3 properties on this massive property, and they're standalone villas. So there's Maison Noire, there's Mountain View Villa and there's Villa Verde. And it's honestly a retreat for mind, body, and soul. And maybe let me take you through each of these properties. So Villa Verde was sort of almost like a little bit more of a farmhouse kind of building, which I didn't have a chance to see because the owners of the building were out from overseas and were living in that. That was used to be their sort of main residence. It has beautiful gardens directly attached to this farmhouse-style building where you can do sort of a drumming circle, you can do yoga or meditation, etc., etc. Just very peaceful and with scenic views across Hout Bay. Then you've got Maison Noir, which is sort of the next building up, and it's got the most incredible koi fish ponds as you walk into this building. So you go across like this floating wooden bridge into the main building, and the entire building is surrounded by almost like a kraal-like structure. So like this wall that surrounds the main building, and if you see it from the top, you can kind of see it almost looks like an African kraal that sort of hugs the entire building into its position. It's got multiple bedrooms. It's got one grand master bedroom with an ensuite bathroom, which is just unbelievable. I mean, you open the doors slash windows of this room and your bed looks straight onto the back end of the 12 Apostles, which is just the most fantastic view. Very spacious, very luxurious. You've got a fireplace, you've got a lounge. You've got a huge bathroom that you can enjoy with a bit of a walk-in closet as well. And the villa itself has a cellar where there's also a private cinema. So if you want to watch a movie or you want to get a couple of people together and watch a movie, you can do that. And in the cellar, there's also a private dining area with a bit of a wine library, which is also quite wonderful. And then upstairs, they've got a pool, which they also heat. And there's a lounge, and there's also obviously an area where you can have dinner, breakfast, and you've got some chefs who come in and they do whatever it is that you want to eat, drink for breakfast, and then obviously if there's any other meals that you want to enjoy as well. And as you can see, it also lends itself to, you know, sort of private things. So if you want to take over the whole place, you can do that as well. And then the final building, which is up the hill, it's a little bit further up. You have to take a little bit of a walk up the driveway or through the forest. Is Villa Verde, and Villa Verde is way more contemporary. It's got a very, very modern feel. There's a gym in there that they've just built. They've got a beautiful sensorium spa where they've also created a whole bunch of treatments with scents and sound and lighting and all the things you can imagine. There's also a natural plunge pool. So for those people who like to take a cold bath or a cold dip in the morning, but they don't want to go into a swimming pool or a normal bath, there's sort of this almost lake-type, pond-type pool that they've built that is very beautiful, very, very scenic, very serene. It's beautiful. And then the rest of the building has got, I don't know how to describe it. It's very modern. It gives me these sort of James Bond feels in terms of the lounge, the dining area, the beautiful kitchen. Then that looks out onto sort of like a lap pool, and the rooms that are available there also look out on Hout Bay, and it's just absolutely beautiful. But what really makes this day really fascinating is the 7-acre grounds that these three properties stand on. And they've got five landscaped gardens, which are looked after by Cherise Villun, and she's the master horticulturist with experience at Kirstenbosch Botanical Gardens. And she oversees these lush gardens, and it really is just absolutely incredible what she's done there. I mean, you know, for people who have no green finger or a little bit of a green finger like myself, you know, you kind of look at this garden with envy and you think, how can some people be so talented? But very interesting stay, and maybe something for you to check out if it's something that you enjoy, if you want to switch off and have a bit of a retreat, that might be one for you. I think that's all we have time for this week on the Santon Times Hour on Mix 93.8, and as always available as a podcast on Apple, Amazon, Spotify, or any other leading digital audio platform. If you want to get in touch, you can email editor@santontimes.co.za. You can get in touch on social media at Santon Times and visit the website santontimes.co.za, and feel free to send through your questions or your comments or your feedback. All of those things are welcome, and it's always good to hear from you. Thank you to all my guests who made the time to be on the show this week, and also Vincenzo, as always, thank you for your hard work behind the mixing desk, and thank you to the Santon Times team as well as everyone at Mix 93.8. So as we wrap up our reflections of Sona 2024, I thought, well, you know what, talking about Tinswalo, who has been the butt of many memes and conversations on social media, I was thinking, you know what, give me hope, Tinswalo, hope before elections come. But as we wrap up with some music on the show this week, I thought, well, let's play out with our guest who is representing us and Portugal in Portugal, Filipa, with the song that she hopes will take her to the Eurovision, You Can't Hide. Thank you for listening, and let's do it again next week.